We here at Dungeons & Pop are celebrating over 2 years of podcasting and are having a dice giveaway. If you go to our Twitter, at Dungeons Pop, and you retweet our giveaway post, you get one entry. If you tag us in a tweet, replies don't count, telling your friends to listen, you get two entries. If you tell us your favorite Adventures with Attitude or Breaking Point character, and why, you get two entries. Tag us so we'll see it. We will be picking at random the winner at the end of June.
Greetings, listeners, and welcome to the next arc of Fictional Heroism. This is going to be a short intro. As mentioned before, we are running this arc due to life issues, making it hard to record for the next hour in time to release this week. So we have about a month of a new one shot, including Wesley of Thornvale and Rob of Songbirding. We hope you enjoy. Our promo this week is a fellow podcast actually using the Lasers and Liches system. It's a streamed campaign, The Quest for the Quantum Rose, and we hope you enjoy.
Prepare for action!
Okay, so you're not sure if it's the lighting, you're not sure if it's the music, it's probably the oysters, but there is something especially fascinating about the way that the light glistens off the crystal dome of Boomsquid's eyes. And you can't help but appreciate just the really fun and unique way that his carapace kind of ridges itself along the back edges. It's getting pretty steamy up in here in Invertebrate Land.
Prepare for adventure!
Okay, so that's 17 total necrotic damage.
Alright, so okay, as you sink your blades into what remains of her cybernetic flesh, she stiffens and the head snaps up, just independent of everything else, looks you right in the eyes, and says to you, "Lord Omnihilus will never be defeated," and then powers off.
I don't know who that is, and therefore I don't care.
I don't know either, but I'm taking that arm.
Prepare for a story unlike any other! The Quest for the Quantum Rose! An epic 20-level campaign based on the Dark Matter setting by Mage Hand Press, with bonus material courtesy of the Retroverse by Lasers and Liches, both for 5e D&D. New episodes available on CastBox FM and YouTube.com/Bakchan most Thursdays. Come follow, like, and subscribe. Join the crew of the Hero's Journey on the quest for the Quantum Rose!
And now, onto the show. Greeting, listeners, and welcome to the first Fictional Hero one-shot that is not being ran by Lizard. It is being ran by me, Bracco, and I have some guests with me for this one. Would you guys like to introduce yourself?
In what order are we going? I'm just curious.
Well, since you spoke up first, guess what?
All right, done and done. Hello, listeners. You might not recognize my voice unless, of course, you listen to probably most prevalently the Thornvale podcast, which you should. I play Henry Marlowe, angsty teenager extraordinaire over there. He's a really great character. But you can also catch me on my own show. I'm sorry. I should probably actually say my name in the midst of all this, which I haven't done. You'll find me. My name is Wesley, but I'll be playing, this character. I'll be playing Marcus Blackwood is my character. He's cool. And you can catch me on Thornvale or the Story Vault podcast. That's my own, plus a few guest appearances on Witches of the City, Vast Horizon, and Little Realms, I believe. It was one solo episode on that one.
Cool. I guess I'll go next. My name is Rob, so I'll start with a name. I am the GM on the Name Givers, Earthdawn Actual Play podcast, and host and creator of the Songbirding podcast, which has nothing to do with TTRPGs at all. Yeah, this is my first time playing in an AP. I've been GMing a lot, almost a year now in the Name Givers one, but never as a player. So this is fun. I'm one of those always GM types.
And last but not least, listeners, you have me, Eric, once again. I'm going to be playing John Claymore, the professional playbook of Monsters of the Week. Fun note, I actually play in Rob's game as a gauntlet. Fun times. And, of course, I am a big fan of Thornvale, so there you go. Fun fact, this is also number 3 of the Thornvale group we've had on our podcast.
I heard good things from Susanna and Hannah about this whole crew we got going on here, so I thought, if there's a slot, I might as well.
Oh, thank God.
Bravo to you guys, because I remember the first time Hannah had played with a different group, she was terribly nervous, but, you know, it ended up being perfect, so it was, I'm excited to see.
I had a lot of fun playing with Susanna. Mm-hmm.
And Derek.
We basically, it was just kind of, but no, the scene that we played, Hannah and I, it was kind of just her and me with occasional NPCing from Sean. And she said that we played so well off of each other, which, considering how nervous I can get, meant a lot to me. So that was super cool.
Mm.
I enjoyed Susanna guesting, and I had a lot of fun with Hannah too on our first Gestelheim one shot. So I'm looking forward to, you know, having you in our group. So,
well, I mean, I've never done a monstrous, let alone the class of my character, which will be revealed. So,
oh, fun! I can't wait.
And I forgot to mention the name of my character.
Yeah, who and what are you playing, Rob?
Cal Smith, a mundane.
Mundanes are always fun to play in a Monster of the Week game.
We're going to do a slight mini session 0 just to go over the histories, but first I want to let you guys know what you guys forgot, your characters got roped into that might actually help you guys pick out your history. You are agents of the library, the stalwart agency dealing with the infection of fiction in reality. The name of this podcast literally comes from the fact you are fighting creatures, people, monsters from fiction crossing over with reality. Like, basically think cool, like if you've seen a movie's Cool World or Who Framed Roger Rabbit, that kind of thing. But it's also seeing like, oh, Loki crossed over into the real world and they're disguised themselves as a...
Actually, I think the real Ghostbusters did an episode about that too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Probably. But I do remember Cool World, though.
The comic book in that episode was getting canceled, and something happened and brought the main hero, which was a cross between He-Man and Superman, and the main villain to life into the real world. So, you know, there was precedent for the fictional crossing over into the real world setup that we have going here.
And a lot of it, that's also, yeah.
That said, my character, John Claymore, is the professional. He's an agent of the library. He is not one of these fictional characters that have crossed over into the real world. He is of the real world.
And the other thing is, magic in this world is basically you're drawing from the narrative. It's literally the name for magic. Which actually, that's the thing I really like, Leslie, about your character is you. I was looking at it, I was like, this fits perfectly in a world with what you put there.
Hmm. Yeah.
So fun times. But yeah, I mean, basically, it's the magic of tropes. It's the best way I can describe it.
Tropes are their own magic. It is true.
Yep.
Exactly. And here we weaponized it.
Yeah, so we just need to figure out your guys' histories from the playbooks.
Yeah, do you mean like the history? I'm just trying to, yeah, I'm just pulling that up now. Did you mean the character history thing? How we know each other?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, like you know, how we know each other, how you got involved in this mess, kind of, yeah. You know, your unique spin on the playbook and character.
Okay, all right.
Oh, is it, I'm sorry, I don't have it in front of me. Is it under the character sheets here, or is it
the history thing?
Yeah, it's on the character sheet near the bottom.
Oh, it is? Okay.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just word of warning, listeners, we are doing Roll 20, so we have a kind of a basic map and directions and things, so we'll be looking at that and hopefully not, you know, calling too much attention to that and confusing all of you.
Yeah.
That said, Sean, I believe you said it was your first time using Roll 20, so fun times.
Yeah.
Mm. Okay, here they are. Let me take a look. Actually, wait. Always make the type on Roll 20 so darn small.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
I know, right? If it helps you guys, since I'm the professional, I basically kind of made the guidelines for the library because it is my agency. And since I have to deal with the agency, I got to pick the resources and the drawbacks.
Mm-hmm.
So, that said, the library is well-financed and we have good intel. The red tape is that it's bureaucratic and there are interdepartmental rivalries. Now, I don't know if that means, like, the different groups within the library are, you know, kind of jockeying for position, or if it's like a FBI/CIA type of thing.
I would say,
you know, Army versus Navy, crosstown football rivals, that sort of rivalry.
I would say it's jockeying for positions, because that's one thing for future ones that I run is there. I mean, it's not going to be like lizards. It's going to be more like people are going to be mixing up teams. In fact, in the future, people that want to will actually get a chance to swap in with the coffee crew if the ring, the circus has to deal with something at the same time as the library.
Hmm. Okay.
And then me and Lizard get to give you guys opposing goals.
Oh, that's going to be a mess.
So I like this one history option of you saved their life from a monster due to an unlikely chain of events. I think that would be an interesting one.
Mm-hmm.
Especially for a mundane.
That would be interesting.
You just imagine a mundane just showing up at the right time and saving their life, like, completely accidentally or something.
Yeah, really. Now, the question is...
I could change this one, but the one... Sorry.
No. Computer lag, you can't help it. No, I was just wondering who Rob was thinking of saving my life or yours.
I'm not sure what Wesley's character is yet, so...
Ah. Well, this might tell a bit on that, because the history prompt that I'm looking at that I think would fit rather well with mine is, they tried to slay you, but you proved that you're on the side of good and asked them what convinced them.
Interesting.
Well, that sounds like it's a you and me thing here.
Hmm?
That history.
Which
it would make it would make sense if that was between you and me.
Yeah, I
since I was probably sent out to go after you.
Yeah.
That would make absolute sense. That was my thought, that possibly your character heard of my character and assumed that, oh, it's because of this, obviously. Mm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I think it would make sense.
I can dig that.
But we don't have to play it out, but
yeah.
Fight ensued. Both got beaten to a pulp, but we both survived, and now something else. I don't know.
Actually, I have an idea. What if it's the same... Sorry.
It could be funny to...
Yeah.
Okay. I was going to say we could actually intertwine that with Rob's and
yeah.
Have him stumble in and save my/our bacon from maybe whatever was really
I could have been
causing the trouble.
Basically Rob was Wonder Woman in Superman versus Batman. You guys beat each other, someone says a name, the real threat shows up.
It's so hilarious because, like, as a mundane, I put in that.
Actually, I like that.
I love it because as a mundane, I put in just like a weird everyday job, basically, as my background. So my character's background is that they're a home inspector. So. Completely random, no. You know.
No, that.
Everyday job.
I like it.
And that.
What?
I like it. It's giving me ideas.
I feel like he likes to investigate the paranormal, and it's specifically haunted homes.
Everybody needs a hobby.
For example?
Yes. Yes. You're a house inspector with a paranormal hobby.
Yep.
And that's why you were there. You were checking out this house that I was drawn to because I was after Wesley's character. And he was there possibly because you were hunting down the real threat.
Ah.
There we go.
No.
And the haunted house was that real threat's nesting area.
Yep. Now, see that? I could absolutely see, because my character is very one-track minded towards a certain something, and he will do nearly anything to get hold of it.
Ooh, even better.
And we'll title that segment Monster at the McMansion.
That would be a funny mystery.
Although, I do find it terribly unfortunate that
Monster at the McMansion, Murder at the McMansion.
Yep.
I do find it terribly unfortunate that there is no move that actually allows me to use the namesake of my the namesake of my class, but that's okay.
Let's stop gilding the lily and come out with, what are you playing?
Me specifically or everybody?
You. Because Rob told you, and so did I. I think you were the only one who was being sneaky about it.
Yes, I was hoping that... Now, let's just say players know, and of course, characters will be revealed. I am playing... I decided to do a twist on a classic creature. I am playing the male counterpart to a banshee, or in this case known as a banhi.
Okay.
Right. So, a banhi.
No, that is actually what it's called. I looked it up. I was surprised. Oh. I didn't realize that there was a proper name for the male and female of banshee. Banshee is only called banshee because it's normally a female.
Oh. I thought it was called banshee because that's what the Americanization... pronunciation of B-E-A-N-S-I-D-H-E, and you know, it's Irish.
Yeah.
I did not realize that there That's was true. A male counterpart to that either.
Which, you know,
the banshee.
They're actually, I looked it up, which, you know, for ease of story, you could just say banshee if you like. I'm not going to take issue with that. My character is fine with that, but or at least me as the player. But my character, for reasons that probably will be revealed at the beginning, is, he is half monster, half human, and his half of monster happens to be banshee.
Nice.
You learn something new every day. I like it. All right. Well, since we have our history, what do you say, guys? We want to turn this over to Sean and let him set up the story for tonight?
All right. Sounds great to me.
Let's go.
Sally watched her son happily get onto the small train that served as the local mall's main attraction from her viewpoint on her wheelchair. It had been a busy day of shopping, and Simon had been quite well behaved, following his mother diligently and helping where he can. As a result, Sally had treated to him a small toy that caught his eye, a scruffy green stuffed animal that he had been talking to since they left the store. She smiled as he waved to her as the train started up, moving around the fox toy, or I don't know, how's it pronounced? F-A-U-X?
Faux? Yeah, faux.
Faux. It's faux.
Faux. Yep, faux.
Yeah.
Faux Toy Village, that was the display in the middle of the attraction. The smile remained on her face until the train came back around the corner, and both son and Toy were missing from the train. Not a sign of either. Her eyes widened as she started taking off in a hurry around the perimeter, old instincts kicking in from a life she had wished was forgotten.
Oh dear.
There were no signs of the child, just an empty train circling a display of stuffed animals staring out into the mall with cold, uncaring eyes, unobserved and unsearched by the police officers that came to investigate.
Mm-hmm. Well, they're mall cops, so, you know.
Interesting.
Library has sent you guys on a mission to a relatively small but decent-sized town of... Oh, shit. I didn't name the town. Okay. Sorry.
The town of Oh Shit. Okay.
All right. Yeah. I didn't know that was an actual town, but all right then.
Yeah. O apostrophe C-H-I-T-T. Oh Shit. They have a creek there, you know. Oh Shit's Creek.
The town of... Actually, I got a town name for it. The town of Manchester.
Hmm. Interesting.
Manchester is United Town. Nothing.
Sorry. No, I know what you're going for there, but...
Could say I missed the goal on that one.
All right, I'll give you that. Not bad. Not bad.
Thank you.
But yeah, you guys were called in from a former operative of the library who had mentioned there were disappearances of children in the area. Unknown. Then no one's sure what's going on. There's no bodies being found or anything.
And is this already a crime scene, or what are we walking into here?
I think by the time she's called you in, it's been a crime scene, and then afterwards, kind of, I think she looked into it herself and waited for them, but the more because she has worked at the library, she knows there's weird shit out there, and this seems like something out of a Goosebumps book to her.
Hmm.
So are we have to kind of drive to this town or something from where we're at?
Yep.
Okay.
So we're already together. That answers my question.
And is it? I'm just curious for future. Like all characters involved, at least in relation to me, know what I am. Have seen it before or not really?
Yeah.
Okay. So I didn't want to plan it. I didn't want to improv some kind of big reveal later or anything.
It would make sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Cal and John are aware because of the big fight you guys all had.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Which, I mean, I'm just imagining how I'm going to describe this later when an event happens, and oh, it'll be fun. Anyway.
I was just wondering, yeah, whose vehicle we're bringing in out of this, because I'm not sure if the playbook for mine comes with a vehicle. I'm not sure if the others do or how that all works with this game.
Nope, I don't have one.
Mine does, actually. In fact, it's one of the...
Okay, so you'll love...
Or rather not... I don't have one, number one, but also I don't need one either.
Oh, lucky. No, but I chose mobility as one of my options, so...
Okay. I was just saying because I could set an interesting scene because I, as a mundane, chose a mode of transportation, and the one I chose was a classic car in terrible condition option. And and I chose a 1974 Gremlin with... decals.
Oh God!
Decals for my home inspection business that says something on the, you know, about...
At least it's not a Pinto.
Some quip on it about, you know, it doesn't matter how it looks on the outside, I check what's working on the inside kind of thing. A little pun on that.
Oh, that's fun.
And the car basically sounds and works fine, but looks terrible. I figure we can roll into town with that thing if you want to do.
We could. We could also use John's car. His is a kind of a classic Crown Vic. It is armored. It has concealed weaponry.
Oh.
But it looks like, yeah, it looks like he's misused it. It's beaten up.
Okay.
Oh. Hmm. Okay then. Hmm.
So maybe a good thing would be we both arrive at the scene with our respective vehicles because, you know, we got called midday. I was on my job and.
Yeah, I can dig that.
You show up with Crown Vic.
Makes sense. It's always good to have a backup vehicle.
You know, I'd like to think with you two having arrived, I would like to think that either my character is like. If it stands to reason, I'd like to think that my character is already there because I could get there much faster than either of you in your terribly slow vehicles.
Sure. I mean, as long as we're there, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And because I'd like to think that the just a little bit of flavor here after the after falling in with the library, I think my character might have become sort of maybe one of. Possibly one of their enforcers or muscle and investigate. And then like some kind of agreement between them and me where they might trade me for you work for us. We help to research the one you're looking for.
Mm-hmm. Ah, you scratch. I scratch your back. You scratch mine type of thing.
Yeah.
Works for me.
Mm. Okay. Did not mean to side road story. I just thought that was cool.
No. No, I mean, have you listened to our podcast? I do that all the time. I was going to say, I should have gotten my dice, but we have the dice roller.
Okay, so you guys are going to check out the mall first?
But does this mall have a Blockbuster? That is the question.
Oh, gosh.
It actually does. It has one of the few Blockbusters still left.
Fun fact, there actually is one remaining Blockbuster and you can rent it out to spend the night. It's awesome.
Wow.
Yeah, it's an Airbnb.
Yeah, it's in friggin' Alaska, though.
Yes! The last remaining Blockbuster in existence. It's awesome.
That's hilarious. I love it.
I do feel sorry for certain people who will never know the ritual of going to rent a movie.
Mm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The Friday night Blockbuster. Yeah.
See, my question is, do I do the terribly horrible Irish accent, or do I just leave it be? I don't know.
I don't know about you, but I think an accent could be fun. I say go with it, terrible or not.
You see a middle-aged woman in a wheelchair waiting for you guys as you come up. There's some scratches that haven't quite fully they heal, but there's few scars. As she seems to just be sitting and waiting for you guys patiently. Hmm. Hands in her
strong woman if she's waiting patiently after her kid gets kidnapped.
Yeah, well she has a hard face. She can she looks like someone on the job.
She's in business mode.
Yeah.
Right?
Hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the circle up above is where is the train, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Ah, okay. So the this thing. Okay, so John comes in.
Okay.
Looking tired. He's got a cup of coffee in his hand. He's wearing what I describe as business casual, which is to say shoes, slacks, a button-down shirt, and his what can only be described as a noir detective trench coat. He's a big man, 6 feet easy, past his prime, though. He's got a bit of a dad bod slash gut, and he looks tired, although I think I may have mentioned that before.
Hmm.
But he nods to the wheelchair-bound woman, probably recognizes her as a former agent of the library. Yes, no, maybe?
Yeah, I think she kind of looks at you and nods, goes, Claymore.
Hmm.
You look good. All things considered.
I don't feel good. And I think John's going to look back towards the door waiting for the rest of his team.
Yeah, I think I'll...
Well, he might not have... he might not have noticed my character as I have arrived ahead, but I also know that... I would think my character knows John well enough to know that... He doesn't like it when my character possibly might decide to jump the gun and start pulling information before everyone is arrived, so he has not done so yet, but I would like to think in some small distance away, possibly, you know, like behind one of the displays, my character steps out. Marcus, he's on the shorter side, say 5'7", 5'8", maybe 5'9". He's on the shorter side, but you can tell anyone to see him could tell he comes from, or at least came from, at one time or another. He might have had an influential upbringing of some type, because his attire is professional. You can tell is tailored. He wears navy blue suit and red tie. But you can also tell that this this suit he's wearing, it really should go in for a cleaning. It's got scuffs on it. It's got one or two maybe questionable spills on it, but he does his best to keep it looking nice. And his look, he's got hair, it's tied back in a like a black hair tied back in a short ponytail he wears.
Don't say man bun. Don't say man. Okay.
No. I've seen those, and no character I have will ever have one.
My brother likes to call them douche knots, I think.
No. It's a ponytail, and he's like middle aged ish. I'd say around 35 or 40 years. He's just been observing. He's just been observing this whole time, and then seeing John come in, he walks up and sees him. He says, "Well, I knew y'all'd show up eventually.
You and getting here early. And I wish I had your kind of speed."
It's a blessing and a curse, my friend, I'll tell you.
Here's our, where's the third member of our little, musketeer group?
This is probably when Cal enters in, and he's middle-aged white guy, looks like, you know, a little bit of a beer gut. Looks like your average, like, everyday Joe kind of thing. With his work clothes on, so kind of like, kind of working class.
We're the dad squad.
Yeah, with the, probably his business logo on his chest, like a little embroidery thing, and if you look closely, he'd probably have some spider webs on his shoulder that he'd just from, you know, sticking his head through various nooks and crannies of some weird house today, and walks in, looks kind of like someone who might be here to do some maintenance work for the mall or something, but heads straight towards y'all, and he'll say, "Well, what do we got here?"
Yeah. Well, what the library says, our friend here's boy was kidnapped. Since you got here first, would you scout out?
And
as he points to the name,
Marcus.
Marcus.
Well, then I
just saying something because I play a Marcus.
Well, then I suppose this is a good segue for me to roll and investigate a mystery to tell what I might have observed, correct?
Yeah.
All right. Here we go. Seems inevitably I always seem to forget which rolls belong to what stat. And it doesn't matter what the game is, I always seem to forget whether it's Planes of Fate or something else.
Well, that's the nice thing of the character sheet. You can actually pull down the moves, too.
Yeah. Okay. Investigate a mystery, which is sharp, which is... Oh my gosh, I'm not used to having a bad sharp, but I have a bad sharp. This could be interesting.
Oh no. Listeners, are we doomed from the get-go? What does this first roll of the game give us?
Oh my.
Find out next time.
Done with now. All right.
Hey.
All right, that's not so bad. That looks pretty good. Let me I heard it. Let me take a look here. Okay. All right, 9. So
high end of the mixed success.
Mixed success, a 9. All right, so I see things and miss things, apparently. What is it that I have seen?
What's your question?
Correct. Yes. Yes, I'm going to say... I'm just going to use the catch-all question. What is being concealed here?
That's a very interesting question.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, so I think with your time watching here and just waiting here for the others to arrive, one thing you did notice about this area is that there seems to be an unusual amount of kids getting like stuffed animals, toys like that variety. And it wouldn't be so weird, but you don't recognize any of these, even though they're being bought at a local mall. So, you know, they're going to be like brand name stuff.
But none of these look familiar as like things you'd find at other locations.
Yeah, I mean, some of them are, but there's also a lot where, like, it just looks like it's, like, a little stuffed kid or a little stuffed bear that just doesn't look. It almost seems familiar, but it's something on the back of your head, like something you've seen as a kid, I would say.
Hmm.
It's like a memory in the back of your head.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like your ubiquitous, stereotypical example of a stuffed whatever.
Okay.
Instead of, say, you know, something, a brand name like a Cabbage Patch doll.
Hmm. Okay, and then I have just been asked what I...
Close.
And then I have just been asked what I have observed, right? One of the characters asked me.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Well, then I
did.
Yeah.
Because you got here first, I wanted to know what you were able to scope out.
Hmm. And I step up a little closer and kind of sort of under my breath and just like, well, I'm not it's not usually my cup of tea anyway, but it seems that seems to be a typical mall, except for possibly one or two oddities. If you cast an eye about, you might find young people toting certain stuffed articles that, at least for myself, I'm not recognized, and that might not be anything suspicious in and of itself, but considering that what I heard from, of course, the police story is that the child is kidnapped recently after purchasing some kind of a stuffed animal himself. Might be some kind of connection there, which wouldn't be the strangest thing we've seen in this job.
True enough. John's going to look at the lady who called us here and go once more for old time's sake.
Oh, and you know her as Sally Lancaster, by the way.
Sally, okay. Sally, I know you talked to police, but you mind recounting the story for us?
Cal will pull out a notepad and start taking notes.
I think she nods and she kind of motions for you guys to follow. She's kind of showing you where she's moving to show you where around the train she was. It was a day of, you know, it's a good day. Kid being a kid, but, you know, like being a good kid, We were picking up stuff to before heading home, and he ran into there's a store in here that like has a lot of kitschy stuff, like they like buy old used toys and stuff, and he found an old Thomas Boyd figure or Thomas Boyd stuffed animal or Thomas Boyd stuffed animal, you know, the Rascal the Ouch, you know, the old one from
can John roll to see if he remembers that?
Yeah, Yeah, I would say that would be a sharp.
That's something I could roll to also.
Yeah, you guys can. Yeah, actually, you guys all can roll a sharp if you want to see if you remember.
Oh, nice.
Two mixed successes.
And. Mixed success.
Three mixed successes.
The name sounds.
Thankfully, this is basically just us trying to recall the name in question.
The name sounds familiar. They had an old puppet show. They kind of had a rivalry with Jim Henson.
Well, we know how that turned out.
Mm.
And now he's dead. No.
I didn't say he was dead yet.
Mm.
Oh, yeah. What year is this in?
Don't give the mystery away. So, I think as they're walking and talking and being told, I think John's going to... I think maybe we should check around the track, see where maybe we might be able to find something where Kidwin disappeared. It's a place to start, at least. I also want to check out the shop that Boy found this doll at, Sally.
All right, that makes sense. Well, I was here. She stops at this one point, and then he went. Does he follow the track? And he follows the track, and this, you know, following the track and showing you guys like this is where I left sight of him, and then she kind of gets silent and kind of looks over the side, and it's like looks over the other side, like. That's about where when I saw he was gone.
I think John's going to put his hand on his shoulder and kind of nod to both Cal and Marcus to maybe have them go ahead and check out where whereabouts she pointed out where she first noticed he was missing and start investigating there while he stays back with her and kind of helps calm her down and asks her a couple more questions.
Yeah,
I think Marcus would start walking up, and I know this isn't a specific move for me, but I'd like to think just for flavor and for reasons that will become apparent when he's looking around at this low down on the floor looking for any marks or anything. He is. He does kind of a quick look around to see if no one's obviously staring at him, and then if anyone were to be up close to him as he's looking at this, they would see his eyes. His pupils just dilate, become huge, and turn blue, like this ice blue color. It's like he's seeing something that only he can see as he's looking at this.
Okay. Oh, he's piercing the veil.
Yeah. Well, it's not really a move, but I'd like to think it's for flavor. Yeah.
I think I like to think Cal kind of looks away during that because it creeps him out too much.
And then
so are you looking like around the display inside the track and the track, or are you just looking at the track itself?
I would if she just made a general gesture of oh, it's around this area, this corner. Well, I would think he's trying to encompass everything within the area, the floor, the track, within the track, all that.
Okay. All right. I think this would be another investigative mystery.
Sharp. Okay.
And Rob, you can roll investigative mystery too. Cause I figure you're looking away, so.
Ah. Well, apparently I am terribly observant, even in the supernatural realm, because I see nothing. Oops. At all.
Oh, I gotta look up what that means. I forgot what that. You just see a bunch of.
It's a miss. It means he doesn't see shit.
Yeah. I don't see a thing. Either I don't see a thing. Well, nothing of importance. I might see something else and become so terribly distracted. What the hell is that? No.
All right.
I think with that failure. You're looking around.
Also, feel free to curse, guys. It's our show, so.
Yeah, we're marked explicit.
Yeah.
It was ironic when we haven't been that explicit. Yeah, but...
It's just because we have potty mouths and then no other reason for the explicitness.
So Cal is rolling a 7 on mixed success on investigating mystery.
Okay. You get to pick one question from the investigator mystery list.
Okay. I'm going to go with where did it go in relation to the kid?
Okay. So first of all, take care of Marcus. Marcus, you look around and you kind of look around and you look off of the track and you kind of stumble back as you're looking. You see this kid walking by with like this doll, and it just, for some reason, it's just so uncanny Valley Muppet.
Ugh.
Ooh.
It literally looks like someone made a Muppet zombie.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
Whoa, wow.
But Cal, you, as you're looking around, you notice there's a bunch of dolls, there's a bunch of stuffed animals in the middle of the track that are all in a pile, kind of looking out, watching the people go by the track. And for a moment, you're like, why would anyone want that? Why would anyone want to go by that?
But by in the middle of the track, you mean like in the center of the round track, not like on the track, Dick Dastardly, time to the track style.
Yeah, no, they're just all like in a pile, just staring out. Like,
okay, in the center of the display.
Okay, so a big display in the center of the okay.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing is you're looking and you're tilting your head, and you, as a home inspector, you realize something. There's a space, because you've seen, like, you've gone in these houses where people piled up stuff. There's part of this pile was disturbed near the bottom. There's a scat where you take out your tape measure and go over and examine it. And you realize that it seems like whatever's missing is at least two stuffed animals worth of space where some they could have been sitting, which is kind of weird.
So listeners, I bet you weren't expecting that surprise. Zombie puppets, oh my. What else will our dad squad get into as they continue to check out the going on at the local mall? Come on next episode to check out Fictional Heroism, Time to Face the Music, Part 2.
Dungeons & Pop is a tabletop variety show. The campaign you are listening to is a ongoing one-shot reoccurring characters campaign using the Monster of the Week system.